Good morning. This is Corporate Conversations, and I'm Dawn Ely with my producer, Lee Cantor.
How are you doing today?
All right. Great, Lee. Thanks.
How's the weather out there?
Oh, the weather is not so great, and the traffic is awful. So
another day in Atlanta.
You know it. Our show today is on employee relations, and this is a follow-up to our show from the distressed companies that we did a couple of weeks ago. Lee, why don't you tell us about our sponsor?
Sure. Today's show is brought to you by Palladium Chief Legal Officer CLOs, offers highly experienced divisional and general counsels as your in-house CLO at budgetable flat-rate fees on a part-time or interim basis. Your company gains the assistance of a dedicated CLO without the cost of having an expensive full-time executive legal employee. A CLO brings to your business in-depth knowledge of your industry, of the players in your industry, their businesses, and how the various legal and business issues affect your industry and your business. Palladium sees the possibilities, not just the liabilities. You can find out more at www.palladiumclos.com.
Wonderful. You know, this show is a really interesting topic to me because as I have spent many years in corporate America myself and gone through many reductions in force and cost cutting, and I've seen how employees can get so distracted from what they're really supposed to be doing on a day-to-day basis and how it can really impact company performance. And we heard a lot about that in our distressed companies show a couple of weeks ago from our experts. And, you know, it's a real challenge in today's environment where employee morale is being affected by canceled raises and bonuses and layoffs of themselves or their colleagues, budget cuts. And, you know, the managers, everybody's doing more with less. And so I'm sure a lot of the managers are running around saying, I don't have time to babysit and cajole and be your best friend and all of that. Yet a lot of these employees are not feeling, you know, a lot of motivation and enthusiasm about taking one for the team and really hitting it home for the company. So we've brought a couple of experts here with us to talk about how even a struggling and challenged company can keep that employee morale up at a level that can really continue to make that company perform. And one of the things that, quote, the experts, and if you go do some research online, you can find that they say employee recognition is a key component. And I'd like to introduce our first expert, Linda Brenner. She is co-founder of Designs on Talent. And her background is she was a co-founder of Designs on Talent, LLC, and a managing partner of
Thank you.
And both firms focus on talent acquisition and talent management optimization for Fortune 1000 companies. Her clients have included brands such as Chick-fil-A, Coca-Cola, Equifax, TJX, Toys R Us, and Microsoft. Prior to her consulting life, Linda spent her professional career in human resources as leading retail and restaurant companies for the Home Depot, Departments of Defense and Labor relationships, and Pizza Hut. So I'd like to introduce Linda now. And Linda, tell us a little bit about, you know, is employee recognition, is it really the answer?
That's a good question. I think it's one piece of the puzzle. I think that managers, leaders, businesses need to figure out how to approach recognizing, engaging, motivating folks during this time.
What kinds of issues are you seeing? Is it just really employee morale from a lack of recognition standpoint, or what's happening out there are you seeing?
I think there's a swirl of activity. Everybody is so busy. The common denominator is that everyone is doing more with less. So leaders have a broader span of control. They have more people reporting to them. They have more people virtually reporting to them. They don't have time to really think through, how can I keep these folks in line, engaged, informed, and feeling a part of what's happening? And ironically, at the time we need everybody focused on really pitching in, many employees feel completely disengaged and, like you said, just checked out.
What's the impact on the organization as you've seen it?
sales, customer service, cost cutting. I think all those suffer when folks aren't engaged and don't feel that they're informed, that they know what's happening or where the company's going or if they're going to have a job tomorrow.
Yeah. What have you seen any specific situations in which, you know, a customer understands, one of your clients, a business, has understood that the root of their problems is an HR issue?
Well, we have one client that is a Fortune 500 client, but they don't have a ton of employees. So they have about 10,000 employees, and what they're experiencing is this desire among employees to move their career, and I put finger quotes around that, meaning a lot of folks are thinking, I've been here a while, I need a promotion, I want a promotion, and they're just not available. So the company's really struggling with, how do we redefine what a career path is? How do we redefine what reward is when it doesn't mean promotion? It can't mean promotion. We don't have the openings. People are not leaving. The attrition rates are lower than normal because people are uncertain and they're just going to stick it out if they can. So we're working on a project to completely redefine what is driving your career, what is career pathing, and how does the employee take it and run with it on their own versus someone having to sit down, coach them, teach them. There's just not the resources for that.
So what other things are you seeing? You know, you said seeing your future and career path is an issue that some people are concerned about. We talked about recognition. What are the other things that you are seeing that a company's not doing that's having a personnel effect?
Well, I think some of this is justifiable. I think from the talent management, leadership development side, we used to see a lot of classroom-based training, a lot of employee meetings, a lot of big events where people are flying in. And that does always help to some extent with communication, clarity of strategy, the role of the employee. When costs get cut, those things are getting cut. There's just no appetite or budget or resources to have ongoing classroom-based training, for instance. So what we're seeing is a lot of need for self-directed, technology-enabled opportunities for employees to really take the onus on themselves and say, I want to learn this. Well, I have this bevy of information and materials I can access when I want to.
Now, how do you feel from the, if you're looking at this through the eyes of the employee, what percentage of employees do you think are at a company just kind of out of fear that they better appreciate this job they have, but they're really, you know, on one side of their mind, they're looking for an escape hatch, and if there was something better out there, then they would jump at it. Like, so that must affect their productivity while they're on the job, and how do you address that?
Well, I think the question about what's the percentage, if I gave you an answer to that, it would indicate
huge...
to what extent I'm a cynic. So I won't answer that, but I do think it's a really big problem. I think there are a lot of people that are under no circumstances are they going to quit right now because they don't know if they went somewhere
else. Because they read the news.
Right. They read the news. Certainly anything involving relocation is just kind of at a pretty much a standstill. But... you know, a lot of people are saying, a lot of researchers are saying when the economy changes, people will leave.
Right. And that must be scary from the people that are running the company standpoint. In the back of their head, they have to know that a big chunk of their employees are there only because they feel they have to be.
Assuming they're paying attention.
Exactly.
They have time to pay attention.
I think logically they know that, rationally they know that, but to go from that thought to what are we going to do about it, how much of a priority are we going to make this, how many resources are we going to pour into efforts to combat that, I think that's where it kind of falls apart. There's too many other priorities right now in their mind.
But isn't the core of the culture of the company, isn't that the glue that would hold them together theoretically? You know, if they had a really good corporate culture and they had good communication with their employees, then it would be less of an issue?
Correct.
That's a big if.
Exactly.
You know, I know at least in the financial industry, there's been a lot of notoriety, I guess is a better word for it, of the companies who, despite them being in a stressed situation, are giving big bonuses. And there's been some talk that some companies have actually issued 90% of their revenues back to the employees as bonuses and incentives. There's been a lot of criticism about that, as well as a lot of justification. Linda, what do you think about that kind of employee recognition or reward, and what other things would you recommend to do in addition or instead of?
Well, I mean, I think in some situations, financial rewards, retention bonuses make perfect sense. I think the trick is, and where some of these companies, I believe, have failed, is not providing context to not only employees who are not in such winning situations, but to shareholders and customers. Here's what we're going to do. Here's when we're going to do it. Here's why. Here's who's going to get it. Here's what kind of money we're talking about. All that seems, in my opinion, to come out after the fact, and it looks horrible. So like almost anything, planful, well-thought-out communication in a timely, proactive way could really provide a lot of context and help for people that just don't get it otherwise.
Yeah, and when you're talking about employee recognition, what other ways other than financial can an employer try to, beef up, if you will, that corporate culture that Lee was talking about and make it a much more familial, I don't really want to leave here, this is still warm and cozy, even though it's a little difficult at the moment. What can they do to create that warm and fuzzy for the employee other than money?
Well, some of our clients have done an excellent job of creating that real paternal environment that really keeps people on their game, motivated, engaged. But it's nothing pithy. It's just the same old good management processes and practices, regular communication, getting people involved in problem solving, sharing ideas, getting their opinions, getting feedback, getting them involved in the business, the opportunities that the business has, regardless of what their functional area is, lots of cross-functional project teams, assignments. And you can do that in a way with less resources if it's a priority for senior leaders and the managers that report to them.
You know, I can imagine that there would be a lot of middle management training that would need to go on here too, because you always have personality issues. You know, I've worked with what I like to call pot stirrers that just love to just talk about bad stuff and stir people up and, you know, get people's, hair riled up. And there are a lot of personality issues that I'm sure come into play here that you've got to deal with middle managers as well as lower level people who may not have enough to worry about in the job itself. So what do you recommend for that?
Well, I think when someone is a pot stirrer, whether they're a middle manager or an HR person or whoever they are, someone's got to address that in a really honest way and call it out. Because when it's not called out and it's not brought attention is not brought to it, then it just continues. And others see that and it just becomes unmanageable. So that requires a little bit of courageous leadership. Mm-hmm. So that's an opportunity. But training around how to lead, how to mentor, how to motivate a team during tough times, how to communicate bad news in a way that's can be productive, does require some training and some leading from those above them. We also really believe in putting tools in manager's hand in a just-in-time way and making it very simple. Sometimes it's as simple as speaking points, we believe, just mm-hmm. to say, here's a good way to approach this topic with your team. So I think there's a variety of ways I could get at it.
You know, I read something the other day that gave, you know, really specific, almost seems like, do you think I'm a moron kind of specifics. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think a lot of people don't really think about it. Like, for example, you know, when a manager has to delegate a task, you know, add some praise of past accomplishments, or when they hand you an update, a project update, thanking them for their promptness, thoroughness, or accuracy of the report. And, you know, when you're having a team meeting or putting together a team for a project, you know, expressing confidence in the group's ability to meet a challenge and, you know, just the basics of what I call touchy-feely, which, interestingly enough, I would wonder how many personality styles or even genders, if you want to get into mm-hmm. the differences between men and women in the workforce, how this is being implemented or how it is being trained on, or just the basics of you know, here's some examples to help you with your employees. What do you recommend? What have you seen in that?
Well, I'm with you. I don't believe it's intuitive to plan for a meeting, conduct a meeting with a team, kick it off, close it out with real actionable items. I don't think people just are born knowing that. I don't think people know offhand how to interview very effectively. I used to run stores for The Gap in Boston. I remember my boss saying to me one day, go out and sell. And I said to her, and this is probably embarrassing in retrospect, but I was like, I have no idea what you mean. Like, what, people know what they want here. They just walk in and buy stuff. So it is a lesson I've never forgotten in terms of it's not intuitive. It might be after we've seen it modeled by a variety of people, did it well, did it not so well. So we've got to show people snippets of what's it like to give effective, constructive feedback. What's it like to lead a really hard-hitting, challenging interview, conduct a team meeting, to give someone recognition? It's great to be able to see someone doing that in a safe environment and practice from that.
With companies right now that don't have a lot of extra cash that they're willing to spend on the non-essentials of the day-to-day operations, how do you recommend that companies acquire information that could be the basis of training and dissemination of better ways of doing things? Do you have any thoughts? And, you know, we'd love for our listeners to hire your organization. They may or may not understand that this would be in their best interest going forward. They may not even understand that they even have an issue unless they're listening and they hear a specific circumstance that maybe they can relate to.
Well, we believe that some models of doing consulting work are really outdated and don't make sense anymore, like buying some database of information for training or development and paying licensing fees year after year after year. Maybe, you know, I think we've seen this in executive search, like companies are thinking, well, I can find and hire a former executive search person instead of paying $150 a search for these jobs in some cases. We don't do licensing fees. We will come in and develop training or development programs or career management in a box or employee meetings in a box, whatever, those kinds of types of products. And it's the companies. It's written specifically for the companies based on their key messages, their key competencies, and it's theirs. They can repurpose it. They can change it. They can roll it out beyond the initial rollout. And we think that's what people really are looking for in these times.
I'm sure you've seen companies do it right as well as do it wrong. Can you give us some examples of some companies that just totally missed the mark and just made themselves worse in dealing with the personnel issues?
You don't have to name the name.
No,
of course not. We prefer not.
It's not a client, the one that jumps to mind. It's one of my former places of work. It's a pretty well-known scenario, but an environment that used to be led by very customer-focused executives that became led by super metrics-oriented leaders. And it just came within 90 days, we implemented a brand new performance review process. What was not important was communicating, trying to figure out what's going on with people, engaging them, problem solving. It was all about the numbers in every part of the business. So even working in HR, it was how many reviews are getting done on time, what's the average hourly rate. So it really, really became quite toxic.
I have seen that so many times where companies' highest execs are more worried about their quarterly results than long-term performance because they get bonused on the quarterly results. And
right.
I mean, that I've seen that being one of the most destructive things to an organization time and time again.
Right.
Is that problem caused by the boards of these companies that are allowing that to happen? Or like, who do you fault in those cases?
Oh, I absolutely fault the boards. I mean, they're incenting the senior leaders or the CEO to act in a certain way, just like compensation works everywhere. You're paying for what you value, and they value results. And so people will go to any lengths to get a $20 million bonus or even a $500 bonus.
Right.
So, yeah.
You know, and that that's a really important part to talk about here, too, is what companies can do is incenting them for the right things. I worked in an organization one time where I was in charge of regulatory and quality, and I was trying to tell one of the division leaders, you know, some things to implement from a quality standpoint. And he just looked at me and he said, "Dawn, I don't get bonused on that."
There you go.
And I, so you know, sad. I mean, I didn't even know what to say. I was so aghast that somebody would have that perspective. But, you know, that's part of dealing with the workforce. You have different personality and different mindsets that people are motivated by different things. And so, you know, when we talk about incenting them to do the right things, first of all, of course, we have to identify what are the right things, mm-hmm. right? And then find ways to properly incent them, whether it's financial or otherwise. Tell us some creative solutions that you've used in the past for companies to help get them better personnel and performance results. And did it work? And what were the results?
Right. I think it can be a double-edged sword. There's no easy answer to this. Employees, generally all of us love knowing, what does success look like? When I get there, how will I know? What am I doing? What are my goals? What are my objectives? And having a clear sense of what's great, what's good, what's okay, and what's not acceptable. So you want to create an environment where goals are clear, success is measured, and then performance or rewards are tied to that. But it gets really difficult because you end up measuring something and it's not sending the right signals or the right behaviors. It's not inspiring the performance you want to see. So I've seen a variety of companies that have really done it well, making it more general. But then you have a challenge of communicating that to the employees. Here's what we're looking for. Here's what good looks like. And then companies that have struggled when they focus on one or two key metrics. And everything from malicious compliance to, you know, I mean, just it's can end up not being so great. So it's really, really tough.
What do you see as the change and the impact to a company when they do it wrong, but then when they do it right? How dramatic is it? Some people may not really appreciate the impact that personnel have on the outcome of the
right.
company.
If they think everybody's interchangeable and if these mm-hmm. people are no good, then I'll just replace them with somebody else. It doesn't matter, really.
Right.
Is there value in having and retaining quality people over long periods of time?
Oh, absolutely. I think the performance review process is the foundation for managing talent in the organization. In my opinion, the performance review process and what comes out of that, like what are people's goals, how did they do, informs who are our top performers, who are our people that are doing okay, and who are the people that are really struggling. And with that information, you can seed high potential programs, people for promotion in the future. You can really deal with, if you're prepared to, the people that are not performing, so you can constantly keep a ready view of what's the state of talent in the organization. If you don't have data, if you don't have goals, if you don't have performance management, if you don't have any process for bringing all that data together, you have nothing to even begin with, which is frustrating for everybody.
So what's the impact to the company?
Well, I think it's like all of us in our past lives where we've been like, wait, why did she get promoted? And how come he gets paid more than me? I just found this on the fax machine, a list of everybody's salary. It just seeds this discontent and this frustration and this lack of morale.
And lack of trust.
Lack of trust. And then when those things are happening, you're not thinking, how can we build the business? How can we drive sales? How can we improve service? How can we innovate? You're not thinking about that stuff.
Yeah, you're thinking, that's not part of my job description.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You're like, you have one foot out the door, you know, mentally and emotionally.
Right.
Yeah, you won't stay till 5:15 to take care of that customer issue.
Exactly.
Now that person who just got a raise, let them do it, mm-hmm. you know?
Mm-hmm. You know, I remember working for a very young entrepreneurial company many years ago, and we all wore at least three hats. But because of the leadership of the executive team and the president in particular, you know, he was the first one in the office and he was the last one to leave, and he could do everybody's job. But he helped people and he encouraged people, and there wasn't an employee in that company that would not have cut their finger off for him personally and for his vision for the company. And so we all believed so passionately in his vision and therefore the company that we all went to extraordinary lengths to make sure that things were done right, because if for no other reason, we didn't want to disappoint him and we didn't want to let down the company.
Right.
And that is not an environment I've experienced in many companies.
Well, and the challenge there is, and we're dealing with this right now with a company, is that the CEO is like that, but his leadership team is not like that. And the company's getting bigger. There's more employees. And it's like, how do we replicate this?
Is that scalable? Can
it's
you scale that?
Really not.
Is that even possible?
Well, and the same thing in the old days at Home Depot with Bernie and Arthur. I mean, we would follow them to all ends of the earth. And, mm-hmm. and just listening to them gave you goosebumps and you wanted to do whatever. But that's truly really not scalable. Mm-hmm. That has to be an innate set of skills a leader has.
Yeah, and when you grow and you have more people managing more divisions of the business, you end up having more personality styles, and you know you can't have a company of clones because it doesn't exist. But also, you know, you need different personality types to do different types of activities.
Right. And also, it's as a company smaller, they know personally. Like maybe the employees were hired because they had a personal relationship, but when they get so large, you lose that, and now you're hiring strangers, and you're asking the stranger to buy into a culture that already exists. That's very challenging.
That's exactly right.
So do you see that the HR priorities are changing, and where do you see the HR issues going in the coming months and years as a result of what's happening in the recession and what companies are faced with on a daily basis with personnel issues?
We've definitely seen a lot of themes around the changes in the last 24 months. The biggest one is that really HR ranks, recruiter ranks have pretty much been decimated. And some would argue it's a good thing. So rather than having 100 generalists in the field, they're now 7. And we've created a shared service center or a center of excellence or whatever you want to call it to describe where employees need to go with their sundry issues. So we see fewer people in the field in HR, in generalist positions, and in the field and corporate, and they're expected to work at a much higher level. And the buzzwords are be a business partner, be a business partner. And I'm back to my sales days at the Gap. What does that mean? Mm-hmm. What does that look like if I see it? So we have a series of programs to really immerse HR folks into situations where they can learn what does it mean to be a business partner? How do you lead through change? How do you make data-driven decisions? How do you manage talent in the organization? Because they don't know how to do that instinctively if they haven't done it in the past. I think the other thing we're seeing is a lot more interest and appetite for outsourcing in different parts of HR that in the past I don't think it would have been considered.
Do you think these changes or these fluxes are going to be permanent, or do you think we'll go back to the old days where we had a lot of middle management generalists and, you know, kind of a big corporate attitude once things get healthier?
It's hard to say. It certainly seems like it's constantly cyclical. So I don't think I can offhand say, oh, it won't change. They'll probably realize in some places that it's too few people. We can't get it done. And then they'll go back, and then it'll be too many.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we see it going
that's
up and back.
It's just the natural cycle, right?
Right,
there's,
yeah.
You can't get around that.
The pendulum swings. Well, great. Well, I'd like to open it up, Barry, if you had any questions for Linda.
I think she makes a great point about right there at the end about the pendulum. I think that you look at it, it's easy to say. I don't think it'll all go back. Everybody likes to say, yeah, things we've learned. But I think that it'll come back. You know, mm-hmm. people will scream enough to say, yes, let's go ahead and staff that up again. Let's do that. We tend to, good or bad, we repeat our mistakes many, many times. So.
Mm-hmm. And you know, with when we were talking about the leadership qualities that really tend to engender the employee motivation and commitment to the company, I've seen and I've heard, and I don't know if Linda, I'm sorry, if you agree, when companies are making cuts to the big ticket positions, you know, they're kind of cutting the upper middle management executive level because of those are the higher paid employees, so that cut is a bigger bang for their buck. And yet they're probably also cutting those with the more experienced leadership skills. Are you finding that the companies simply don't have the leadership skills left to be able to implement these kinds of employee recognition and really employee motivation and engagement type of feelings?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think companies tend to be very, very thoughtful when cutting senior leaders. And I do think they have a good sense of the ramifications of that. What I'm not sure is thought through as much as when they do bigger reorgs, bigger, you know, large scale. We don't think about knowledge transfer. We don't think about experience as much. We don't think, how are we going to capture best practices among these groups? How are we going to replace the work that's being done? So some organizations we see make big, big changes without thinking through, what's the process? How are we going to provide service or products when we remove this whole group? It's more like, we got to save costs. We got to, you know, show the market that we're really making some deep cuts.
And when you remove a person who has history there, you lose that history.
Right.
You lose that person who can say in a meeting, you know, hey, we tried that 2 years ago and that blew up in our face. You know, that person's history goes away.
Right. And Barry's right. Even if that person was sitting in the room and said, I did this 8 years ago, people are like, okay, well, we're here now, so we'll make it work.
Mm-hmm. You know, it seems like it might actually behoove companies to at least retain some of these very experienced leadership-oriented execs on a consulting basis for some period of time during a knowledge transfer transition.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. But I'm sure they're so panicky about cost-cutting right now, got to have it right now. That they probably don't do that. Is that something that you tend to recommend for people if you come in and you say, okay, let me help you do this headcount, you know, cut, and how we reorganize this, and let's make sure that there is a transition?
Well, yeah. I mean, we take a really process-focused approach to looking at the talent that would be, you know, let go. And definitely some of these innovative companies are really doing amazing things, creating part-time positions, virtual positions, consulting positions. And we're seeing more and more openness to really non-traditional approaches to keeping core talent involved, even if a whole group is let go. And some companies, it's just really hard to do that. But the same as holds true of when they're hiring. You know, they want to hire someone a lot of times 8 to 5 in the office. I don't care if it's a 2-hour commute. And a lot of us are really starting, really? Like, I have to sit in a cube to do this job?
Right.
And the companies that are going to win are just willing to take chances and say, you know what, if someone's a slacker at home, they're going to be a slacker in the cube. Mm-hmm. So hopefully companies will get very aggressive about getting great talent through really innovative ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because a lot of those really great talents, they say, you know what, you can take this job and put it somewhere because I can go and do something on my own. And there's an awful lot of new startups and, you know, 1, 2, 3 person consulting, you know, groups out there that whether they've been forced to leave their corporate job or whether they've chosen to because now they don't like the new system and the new management and the new organization. And so there really is a risk to the corporation if they lose some of their best folks, not necessarily because these people are going to come out and compete with them, but, you know, they can lose, and it's not everybody is panicked about not having a job.
Right, right. I think if you did a little analysis of our team of 14 people, practically every one of us used to have what you might call big corporate jobs, mm-hmm. and all of us have eyes wide open just walked away from that, mm-hmm. and it's been great.
Wonderful. Any more questions, Barry?
No.
Okay. Well, tell us, Lynn, about your company a little bit more, what you focus on, what your really specialty is and your sweet spot for the type of customers you're looking for and how we can reach you.
Designs on Talent focuses on helping HR leaders improve talent acquisition and talent management. So we really do a lot of work around optimizing the way recruiting processes work for companies. We don't fill jobs. We're not an RPO firm, but we work with the existing talent acquisition leader and team to make them more effective and the process more efficient. And on the same side, talent management, we also work with companies to improve and assess their performance management, succession planning, career pathing, and leadership development efforts. We're kind of an extra set of arms and legs for HR leaders.
And is there any sweet spot for you on the types of customers' size or particular issues that you find you work best with?
We have very deep experience prior to consulting and as consultants with large multi-location employers, often with large hourly populations. So all levels of leadership, lots of retail, restaurant, manufacturing, distribution. That's kind of our sweet spot.
Okay. And how do we reach you?
Designsontalent.com.
Okay. All one word.
Yep.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
Great. Well, now I'd like to move to our other expert, Barry Boyles, who we're going to move from the external consultant that Linda represents to the what is it like on the inside on a day-to-day basis in the hallways and with the specific situations that companies go through. Barry is co-founder of Carciba Business Services, and he has been an outsourced provider of human resource services for small-cap companies, and he has owned this company since 2001. He focuses his main attention to the business objectives of clients and how to incorporate human resource strategies into these objectives. He's been working in human resources for over 20 years and has worked in both Fortune 100 companies as well as small startups in both the B2B and B2C industries. His background covers all aspects of human resources with a heavy emphasis on organizational development and employee relations. He has also served as Vice President of Human Resources for a multi-state trade association for both internal operations as well as starting an outsourced division providing HR services for association members throughout the Rocky Mountain region. Barry, welcome to our show.
Great to be here.
Wonderful. So tell us a little bit about, I know you've had several specific situations in which you have been the internal HR chief, and what is it like being on the inside when all this is going on?
It's fascinating to watch how you sit in the strategy sessions and you talk about a lot of the things that Linda's talking about. Let's implement this and let's focus our attention on whether that be incentives, whether that be layoffs, whether that be expansion, what have you, but then to go in and see how it's actually affecting employees and how are they engaged with that, how are they accepting that, and kind of get that reality check is really what I like to do. And really you get that by walking around, talking to them people. How does, you know, we talked about implementing whatever that project or process may be, you know, how is that actually affecting you on a day-to-day basis? What's happening? And that's where over the past 18 to 24 months, you've seen that really, I'd say, more of a disconnect between what in theory we say we want to happen and in reality what's happening. And, you know, I think that sometimes your mid-level, first-level managers say, yeah, it's going great. But then when you really dig into the employees, they're like, this is killing me. It's mm-hmm. absolutely killing me. And that's where, you know, Lee talked a little bit about people who are, they're there, but they're not engaged. And that's what I'm seeing a lot of. Discontent with some employees where when I say discontent, it's more of, yeah, I'm going to, the phrase I've been using is they don't want to put their head above water right now. Mm-hmm. And so that's where you see some little bit of that disconnect. And then it comes back to, well, why is this process not working? What's happening with it from a macro standpoint? And so where I've seen it done well is those times when you have those managers who are very well engaged and they're down there working with their employees. You talked about the CEO for an entrepreneurial company where there's that buy-in from the employees because that person is down in there. They're seeing how it is and they're making changes on a quick basis when things need to change, when something's not working like we think it's going to work. That's where you see it working. When you see it not work, it's those times when they say, yeah, this is what we're going to do, and boom, they move on to something else. So that's, I guess, from a trenches standpoint.
And is those situations in which it's not working, is that because there hasn't really been proper implementation, or did they just get the project wrong?
I would say both.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's implementation. Sometimes it's, you know, like any kind of, whenever you put a project in place, let's say, you know, you're continually trying to update that because it's not going to be like you think it's going to be, you know, when you write it down on paper. You know, you can draw up your boxes. You can say, here's how it's going to work in the process. Well, something doesn't happen that way. You know, a great example of that is incentives. You know, when I talk about incentives, well, what I talk about, the cautionary thing is when you incent something, it's going to happen. And mm-hmm. you have to be careful because I always talk about you push down on one thing, something else can pop up.
That's right.
And
right.
So how does that, what are some of the other things that are going to happen? And sometimes those are unknown. And you've got to be in there so that you can react to it very quickly. So it could be the process itself. It could be an implementation of it. But a lot of times what I see when it doesn't work is the managers that are responsible for making it happen kind of say, here's what we need to happen. And then they kind of wash, I don't want to say they wash their hands of it, but they go on and they either they assume people know what needs to happen or they don't follow up on it. And those are the things that, well, they told me I need to do this. I don't understand this. And I'm going to do it anyway because my boss told me I had to.
Is that a function of, kind of the downsizing of so many companies? People get more and more responsibilities that maybe they're not perfectly suited for?
Oh, absolutely. I think so. It's
and so now they're like, well, you know, Mary used to do this and she's no longer here. So now you have to do, you know, the work still has to be done, whether you get rid of the person or not. I mean, the work doesn't go away. So now somebody who has never done this before is now on the learning curve of this. And then they just take a shot and, you know, things happen.
Oh, absolutely. And it is. I mean, you know, attrition is down, but there's still some attrition out there. And you don't see people responding to replace those people who go, say, you know what, clients that I've seen that have had layoffs, you see this a lot. Those that have not had layoffs, you still see it through attrition. They said, we're not going to replace. Mm-hmm. We're not going to replace because they've had to survive. Just because I say, you know, from a cash standpoint, we're not going to do it. So you have more and more piled on people. And you're right. That person who says, I'd never done this, but I'll figure it out.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you see that a lot.
You know, we talked about engagement and the employees actually wanting to participate with the company's success. In your mind, based on your day-to-day operational experience, what does that mean really for an employee to be fully engaged with an organization?
I laugh because, you know, Linda talked about the cynic on her side. On my side, you know, I look at that two ways. One way is some employees have told me they see employee engagement as a company asking me to do more and more and more and more without more pay. And they say they want me to be an engaged employee. That just tells me they want me to do more. It doesn't have to be that way, but that's the way some employees are looking at it. It can also be a understanding what an employee, what do they, you know, what do they want to do? What are they good at? How do they want to add value to the organization and helping them learn that? You know, we talked at the beginning of the show about employees really becoming more responsible for their own growth and having those discussions between a manager and the employee about what does that look like? How does that, you know, where do you want to be in 3 to 5 years? What can we do to help you get there? I'm not going to take your hand and lead you there, mm-hmm. but what can we do to help you gain those experiences that you need so that you can continue to grow yourself? Again, I work with a lot of smaller companies, so, you know, the jobs are not there. You know, there's not a big, thick structure, but I talk to employees more about, as companies expand, there's new opportunities for you there. So how do you continue to grow your skill set? So from that standpoint, the engaged employees are the ones that are, yes, the company is letting me learn new skills and new traits. And that's the kind of engagement. And they can then apply that to the jobs they're working on. And then as new opportunities come up, they can say, yeah, I've done part of that before. Let me take on this more responsibility. So I think that engagement, if it's done well, it can be extremely productive for both the employee and the mm-hmm. company. If it's done more of, we want engaged employees, and here's your 3 new jobs to add on to what you're currently doing.
And just be grateful you have a job and shut up and do it.
Well, that's a great quote because I actually wrote a blog about that because I've heard that so much over the past 18 months from managers that say, you know, these people just need to be happy they have a job. And I hear that a lot. And then, you know, it could be a day or two later, they say, why are my employees just out there they seem to come in at 8, leave at 5. They're mm-hmm. they're phoning it in, so to speak. And I said, well, 2 days ago, you told them they just need to be happy they have a job. And so you can't be surprised when they're acting like they're just happy to have a job.
That's
and I said,
right.
You can't have it both ways. And it's been one of these, it became one of my obsessions and pet peeves, so to speak, about, you know, for managers to have this, you know, just be happy you have a job, but then you can't be surprised when the people are acting like they're just happy to have a job.
Yeah.
Because I heard that a lot over mm-hmm. the past 18, 24 months.
And there's a big difference between, you know, treating your daily activities as just a job or just a paycheck, rather, versus something that you really enjoy contributing to.
Oh, absolutely.
And also, I think it impacts the fact that the employees less willing to take chances and risks and go out there and try new things because they, you know, they don't want to lose the job. They may not be thrilled with it, but they don't want to lose it. So they don't want to go out on a limb and try something that fails where they can point to them and say, you know what? You blew it. You're out of here.
Boy, I've worked with so many managers that like that. Oh, that's one of my corporate pet peeves, but that's another story.
Yes. It has become a real risk-aversive culture the past 18 months, 18, 24 months from not everybody. I don't want to say it's across the board. I don't think you can ever say that, but I think you see a lot more risk aversive. I mean, you say, we've got to just make sure we survive this downturn.
Yeah, right. They're in a bunker waiting for the bell to ring to say, hey, it's okay to come out now, and now your business is going to grow.
That's right. And, you know, it's interesting when you talk about, you know, job advancement and opportunities for new levels of contributing to the company and just advancement generally, promotion, that's what I was thinking of. But yet you also have to really take a look at the personality and whether or not that person is suited for that. You know, I've seen time and time again somebody that has been promoted into what should have been a strategically based role that are really tactical people. And it doesn't matter how many incentives you give them, they just can't think that way. So, you know, and then the senior managers are continually to get upset with this person because they're just not performing. But, you know, the reality is they don't know how to do that kind of a role. And that's, a problem, I think, for finding advancement opportunities for certain personality types that you need a certain mindset. And they don't have it. You know, I don't know that you can teach that.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's one of the, I don't want to say fallacy, but if a senior leader, they think everybody, not all, but a lot of them think that everybody thinks like they do. They want to be a senior leader and they want to be able to, and that they don't understand. Some people just are good at what they do and they want to stay within those boundaries of that. Like you said, not moving from a tactical to a strategic role. And the challenge, good leaders will find ways to keep those people involved and find new challenges for them within that tactical arena versus saying, okay, let's move them up over here because we think everybody wants to be promoted to this.
And they've been here X number of years, so now it's their turn to be this.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Well, Barry, I know you have a lot of experience in some of the specifics of companies and what's going on. Tell us a situation or two of what was going on that was creating a lot of problems. What was the personnel issue? What was the impact to the company? And what did you guys do about it? And did you do anything that didn't work first and then tried something else that did?
I think a lot of what happened, we went through some layoffs. So a couple of clients went through layoffs where, again, they were used to about anywhere from 50 to 75% growth. And we were staffing to prepare for that growth. And all of a sudden, when the recession kind of hit, they're like, okay, stop. We got to slow down here. And the reaction was we need to let go of a lot of people instead of saying, okay, let's look at what we have. How can we, what are some other, whether you say projects, what are some work that we can utilize these talents for? It was as much as I kind of fought some of this, it was, we're just going to let go across the board. We're going to let go 20%, let's say.
Like last one in is first one out.
No, not necessarily. And again, a lot of this was gut feel by saying, okay, I want to let this person go and this person go. There wasn't a rhyme or reason around that. And there wasn't a lot of thought about what do you say, what do you do with some of the people that are left behind? Now, a tactical mistake that I really saw was specifically saying, We got to do this. It's very painful. This will be the last time we have to do this. But we got to do this because we want to survive. Well, lo and behold, 6 months later, we got to do it again.
Yeah.
Now, you've just lost a lot of trust because, you know, you're told, okay, I survived. You know, and that was the true feeling of, I survived the cuts.
And that's how the employee feels, like a survivor.
Absolutely, they do. And then all of a sudden, 6 months later, okay, we got to have another round of layoffs.
And they're like,
whoa, hold on a second. You told me we were all done with this before, and now we're doing it again. And then all of a sudden, 3 months later, okay, we got to do some more rounds of cuts. Instead of really, you know, and I know that the gut reaction was we got to survive, but instead of taking a couple steps back and saying, let's look at this, you know, what are our cash reserves? What can we do? You know, it's, I think we're so worried about the here and now with cash. And again, I understand we got to be able to survive, but what kind of cash reserves do we have? Can we may not be able to meet our budgets or may not be able to meet our goals that we had for the next 6 to 12 months. Can we survive, get through this and without having to do some of this? Because there really is some seeds of discontent and some people who are, I literally mean, I have had employees tell me, I will not even put my head above the water right now because I don't want to get shot. Mm-hmm. Those are the words that I've heard from employees. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, you've got to be able to put yourself out there sometimes, and they won't take risks.
Right.
Now, again, on the other side of this, I think you can say, you know, how is it done well? About, you know, maybe not doing mass layoffs and saying, you know, again, let's look at some of the cash reserves. What are some other ways to generate revenue out there from a basic standpoint, some other things we can do, and how can we use some of our current staff to help make some of that happen, and really communicating out to the employees about what's going on, what's happening, here's what we need from you. It was interesting, the first half hour of this, there's no telling how many times we heard the word communication. But a lot of times when you're having troubles, you don't want to communicate that out to the employees.
Well, you don't want to communicate the bad news.
Exactly.
And I think that's a challenge with the bigger companies, that their employees become kind of very security-minded. And a lot of entrepreneurs, at least the people, I see a lot of entrepreneurs in here, they'll take more risks. And security is less important than flexibility, and other things are more important. But when you have that mentality of security and they get this almost sense of entitlement, then once you start disrupting that, forget it. You know, they're gone. I mean,
yes,
mentally, that's the worst place they can be. They're worrying about this 24/7 now, you know?
Absolutely. And it's,
and they'll pay the price that company for years. That's not a short-term problem. That becomes a long-term problem, because when the economy gets better, these people are in the back of their head going, oh, wait, you know, the first bump in the road, I'm going to be out of here.
And that is, there was a study came out a couple weeks ago about the effects of the long-term effects of the short-term gains of layoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And those companies that did not have to engage in major cuts through layoffs were actually, you know, 10, 15 years much more successful than those companies that did do the layoffs, did do that cost. And I think a lot of it has to do with that. Yeah, we survived that, but those employees don't forget, and your best employees certainly don't forget. And they say, you know what? You know, I think that whole mindset of trust, you know, I put my trust completely in the company, was shattered about 10, 15, 20 years ago,
right?
When we had the first, you know,
with these massive layoffs.
And
people had that realization that I'm not going to get the gold watch anymore. Those days,
exactly.
You know, those were my parents' days. Those are my days.
Correct. And
What was some of the specifics that your successful company implemented that made it successful?
It was, I hate to say the word communication, but it was sitting down with the employees. And, you know, I talk about a mantra I use a lot of times is, if you treat somebody like an adult, they'll act like an adult.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sitting down with them explaining, you know what, these are going to be a tough 6 months, tough 12 months, tough 18 months. Here's the economic condition we're in. We're going to have some short term, we're going to have some problems here. We're going to have to cut back on whatever it might be. But really being honest with people, saying, here's the situation we're in. Here's our strategy to get through this. And here's what I need you to do to help. And it is over communicating that over and over and over again, and not being afraid to tell them the bad news as well as the good news about, you know, we did lose a client, you know.
Right. You can't pretend we didn't. There's going to be a ramification of us losing our biggest client, you know.
Yeah. And saying, you know, a lot of times they want to hide that on the side, but they say, here, we lost this client. What are we going to, we have to make up this much revenue,
right?
And what are we going to do to make that happen? Now, and those are ones that, you know, because the employees have phenomenal ideas and say, mm-hmm. Well, you know what we can do? And that's ones where I've seen would be a huge success, is when there's very honest and very open communication throughout all levels of the organization. And that is, it takes a lot of work on the behalf of the leaders and the managers, because when you get into a stress situation, you tend to want to bunker up and really focus on the numbers and focus on those metrics, mm-hmm. You know. And that was the exact time when you need to be out there more and more and more about, here's what's really going on.
And that's where you'll get the engagement. Instead of having this kind of top down where the people at the top know everything and then the regular little people don't, if you can have that kind of communication, you're going to get the ideas bubbling up from the people on the mm-hmm. front lines where they could save money here or attack a new account a different way, because then they're going to be open to sharing because they feel that their voice will be heard.
Oh, absolutely. That's exactly right. And I think a great example, I have a client that actually sat down with the employees and, you know, this is a very minute example, but here's our health rates. Here's how much they went up. Here's what it means. Here's our options that we can do out here. Here's what it means for the bottom line of the company. Here's what it's going to mean to your profit sharing. How do we want to get through this?
Mm-hmm.
And really engaging the employees from that standpoint to come up with a solution that will work for both the company and the employees. And, you know, the company said, we cannot stomach this. It was about a 67% rate increase on their health insurance. They said, we cannot stomach this. We, financially we can't do it. What are some things that we can do? And the employees were very open. Okay, if we take on this much of the burden now and we, again, we can shift the deductibles around, things like this. We worked with the employees and worked with that about, again, you asked for a specific example. That's mm-hmm. the way that they were able to really work through this and take what was typically would have been, let's get into a conference room and talk about it from a, you know, three or four people in a senior leadership role and talk about, here's what we're going to do and just kind of put this memo out to the employees, where the employees would have no idea why their deductibles are changing mm-hmm. or why all of a sudden they have.
Right. You know, all of a sudden, here's my company taking some away from me again.
That's exactly the way
for more.
Yeah.
But now they're engaged them, and it's the employee came up with the idea that ultimately gets used. So then they feel they had a stake in the game. I mean, it's a totally different mentality.
It is. It's buy-in.
It is buy-in, and it's something that, again, I think when you get into a stress situation, you tend to do less and less of that mm-hmm. because you want to protect what you have, and you really get into this, I'm closing up, and you don't want to open things up to negative
right.
conversations.
Well, it's their fear. I think it's the upper management's fear of it's almost showing weakness that they don't know the answer, they don't have the answer. And a lot of times you have to engage the whole company, I think, for everyone to move forward.
Yes.
So what are the personal, not, I don't mean personal, but I mean the characteristics or the activities that a successful leader has shown in these companies when they're going through these difficult times? You talk about communication. You talked about involving the employees. Is there anything else that you would recommend to our listeners, a senior executive, to do or not to do in trying to engender greater employee performance, which could result in better company performance?
I think it's being really honest about what the business is, what the state of the business is, when it's good, when it's bad, when they're working at a, you know, it's being that brutally honest with the employees and understanding that, you know what, hopefully you hired smart adult people who can do their job very well. And again, and I hate to say that that's simple, but it's treating that way and saying, here's the situation and how can you help me get through this? And the really good ones that I've seen are really honest with their employees and they get that, I won't just say engagement, but that buy-in from the employees, and they sit down with them and can talk with them about that. Again, it doesn't always have to be a formal meeting. It can be a quick 10-minute, you know, here's what's going on, what's happening with you. And really, another thing is I think asking the employees, what do you think? Let me know what you think about this. Again, I think as leaders, we tend to always think that we have all the answers. We have all the answers. We got to provide all the answers. And sometimes that's not true. And sometimes that answer is out there. It's just a matter of extracting that out. And we don't ask that question of, what do you think?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was with a company that did exactly that. They, you know, really were trying to increase performance and increase sales, and they asked every employee. Now, granted, this was a smaller company, so they didn't get 3,000 or 10,000 answers, but they asked every employee, "What are some? Give me five suggestions that you would have that we could do that could increase sales other than hiring a new person." And when the meeting took place, where everybody discussed each of their thoughts, you know, the president was very, very pleased, but he also said a couple of situations, he said, I never thought about that. And he even said about a couple of situations, he said, you know, when I first read that, I thought that was kind of stupid, but when I hear you explain how it would work, that actually makes a lot of sense. So, you know, the reality is, and we've heard this time and time again, two heads are better than one, three heads are better than two, you know, and at some point you do have a point of diminishing returns, and if mm-hmm. you're trying to get 10,000 opinions to all, you know, work up together, but you know, as you point out, the reality is that no one or two or even three people are going to come up with all the answers. So, you know, it's a great idea to engage the employees.
It's, you know, I remember like a management 101 thing is you always hire people who are smarter than you. We always talk uh-huh. to managers about that, do that. Senior leaders have the hardest time with that. Understand that, you know, there are people out there who are smarter than them and hiring people like that. And if you do that, then you know what? You're going to have a very successful group of people.
Mm-hmm. Right? That's part of recognition, too. I mean, we could have a whole leadership course talking about that. Yeah, well, great. Barry, really appreciate all of your experiences. Linda, did you want to ask any questions of Barry?
Well, I wanted to know if to what extent have you seen companies turning towards outsourcing, and how has that changed over the last 24 months?
It's growing. It's growing more and more. Again, you talked about the number of HR people who have been cut out there, and it is a very high number. You know, we tend to look at our own groups. You know, marketing will say marketing always gets cut when you get to a recession. HR will say HR gets cut, and you know what have you. But you see a lot more of that being of in the HR world being cut, and there's still functions that need to happen out there, and so you do see more because the functions are still there. They have to happen, but they are trying to find other low-cost ways to do that. And one way is through outsourcing. I've seen quite a bit of uptick over the past, a couple years, year to 2 years, of things of that nature.
What about talent acquisition, recruiting? How have you seen that change?
That's changing. It's right now, I work with a lot of smaller companies. When I say smaller, less than a couple hundred employees, you talk about 10,000 employees. I work with a couple hundred employees. The recruiting is actually picking up tremendously right now.
Oh, that's good news.
You hear about the economy, and I think, I'm not an economist, so I can't predict, what's coming. But I guess from my little world that I see a lot of recruiting happening now because their work is starting to, especially I have a few engineering firms that I work with where they're dealing, and not so much, they're dealing with commercial clients, and so their work is growing quite a bit now, and they have a lot of recruiting happening in that arena. So I think from that standpoint, you see a lot of hiring going on. Again, it's not as fast as I know as the economists would like to see, but we are seeing a lot more of that now. And I'm trying to caution them and say, let's really think about, again, instead of just this knee-jerk, okay, we need to hire 15 people over here with the same model we had last year, let's look at, again, what is our talent strategy? What is our workforce strategy? What does that look like? And so I start to see a little bit more, yeah, that makes sense. Let's talk about it from that standpoint.
Thanks.
Wonderful. Well, Barry, tell us a little bit more about your company. What services do you provide, and what's your sweet spot for your customers?
Well, we are a human resource outsourcing company. We become a company's HR department for them. A sweet spot for us are typically those companies less than a couple hundred employees. You know, really 50 to about 100 employees. They don't have HR departments, so they may have somebody who does payroll, but they don't have a human resource executive or a human resource manager, generalist on staff, and they have HR issues happening, and they want somebody to come in and, again, look at their business strategy and how does human resource help make some of those things happen. That's really where I focus a lot of my attention, and a lot of that revolves around employee relations, and it does revolve around the growth strategies and how, you know, what kind of people you bring on board to help make that happen.
Okay, great. And I can imagine that's important to get companies prepared for when the recession is over and they are looking to get additional employees, but also to just even motivate their existing employees to get better performance out of it.
And it's a very delicate balance right now. I mentioned, I'm going through a lot of recruiting. One of the things that happened about a year to a year and a half ago was you talked about pay raises being frozen. Well, if that's still happening, those current employers are saying, why are you hiring 15 people out here when my pay hasn't changed over the past 18 months? Mm-hmm. And that is a very delicate balance that I'm having to talk with CEOs about. You need to be cognizant of that because you have people who they may not say anything, but they're over there steaming mad because they're like, I haven't had a pay raise in 18 months yet. I see you hiring 10 or 15 people over here.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I understand why we're hiring people because the work's coming in, but you have to also look at the people you currently have on board.
Yeah. So how do we reach you?
My company is Carciba. It's CARCIBA.com. People always ask me what it stands for. It's my son is Carson, my wife is Cindy, and I'm Barry. Mm-hmm. And that's where Carciba came from.
There you go.
And my contact information is on the website.
And that website is?
www.carciba.com.
Okay, great. Wonderful. Well, Linda and Barry, you all have just been a wealth of information and great, great ideas for companies who are in desperate need of trying to figure out how to get better performance out of their employees right now so they could get better company performance. We talked about how important it is for you guys talked about how important it is for these leaders to have a little bit of humility. You know, they don't have all the answers. Engage your employees with solutions and problem solving. You'll be amazed not only at the solutions that they come up with, but how engaged the employees will become and committed to the efforts that you make in whether it's cost cutting or just in performance with more sales, etc. I think that's wonderful advice to give to people and very effective. So I appreciate you all joining us this morning. And Lee, who is our sponsor again?
Palladium CLOs. Palladium CLO brings to your business in-depth knowledge of your industry, of the players in your industry, their businesses, and how the various legal and business issues affect your industry and your business. Palladium sees the possibilities, not just the liabilities. You can find out more information at www.palladiumclos.com.
Wonderful. Thank you all. And join us again next week for Corporate Conversations, where our topic will be the corporate office space. Do you have the best deal you can get? Thank you again for joining us, and we'll see you next Tuesday.